fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend, Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
Great. Great. You know, we were just talking about being creatures of habit. We have recorded, I don't know, the last 200-ish episodes of this podcast in the same place. I don't think with any exceptions.
Yeah. I mean, barring like our wind-up trip.
Yeah. And even then, right, that's not really, like, we're still recording the podcast. We decided, fuck it, let's switch it up tonight.
It's nice outside, so it's outside. Nice.
Yeah, we're outside. We're in my backyard, which is, I mean, it's not the nicest backyard. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that's not that's true. But it is nice still.
It is really nice out. It's the first evening at this time that it's been like actually comfortable outside. And not still like hot, you know? Everett's adjusting.
We've got like a disc golf basket in case we wanna like, you know.
There we go. Like rattle some chains.
Mid recording, clang some chains.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fire pit is not running. I think it would damage our electronics.
It would. Certainly. It would certainly fry the electronics. So we kept it off for the time, but
that's okay.
Yeah. How are you, Andrew?
I'm good. I got a new video game yesterday, and that's all I want to do. So let's get this show on the road.
what'd you get?
I got,
or is that your other thing?
No, it's not my other thing. I got the Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I don't know if you've played any Assassin's Creed games.
Not a single one.
They are fantastic, and they just get like there's some that are dumps, but by and large, they're really good, really cinematic, like reasonable open world, but still. Kind of some rails in place to keep you focused and on task, but lots to do outside of the story. This one's interesting. So this is the newest one that I've played, and there are things. It's not quite choose your own adventure, but if you do or don't do something at one point in the storyline, it will have influences later in the story. So I, for example, today came across this bounty hunter and fought him once and he kicked my ass and I was like, oh, I don't want to deal with that guy. So I didn't kill him. And then like three missions later, he was the captain of this troop that I had to do battle with anyway. But I was then fighting him after already having dispatched a significant amount of people. So I was like way worse off going into that fight. So I went back three missions and killed him. And then I didn't have to deal with him in the future mission.
Oh, I see. So it like actually you can change the outcome of your story.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. It's
pretty interesting. I've not played a game like that before, I don't think.
Yeah.
Where you make decisions and it actually impacts what happens. And it like made me start thinking about how many alternate realities they've had to generate to be able to accommodate that level of detail.
I understand that's also the way like Red Dead Redemption operates a little bit, where you can change the story by killing certain people or...
Not really.
Okay.
At least in like Red Dead Redemption's story is pretty... It's a strong through line. There's just a lot of shit you can do that isn't the story.
I see. Well, that's terrific. Yeah. I like a new video game.
Yeah,
so I like getting lost in a new video game. It's one of my favorite things.
I'm thoroughly lost in it. I just want to go kill more.
You're like, Everett, can we please get the show on the road?
Yeah. I just want to kill more Athenians right now.
Well, okay. Well, with that in mind, we're not here to talk about video games or sitting outside or anything like that. We're here to talk about watches. And I know it'd be a little change of pace, but since we're outside and doing things differently, do you want to get us started?
Yeah, I didn't come prepared, so I actually don't know what I want to talk about first.
just say Seiko, Seiko,
and
blah,
we
blah,
just,
blah.
And we just hate Seiko. You know,
I don't hate Seiko. I don't hate Seiko.
Oh, no, we hate Omega.
Yes.
I'll start off by saying this was kind of a slow week, and I think part of it's the flash to bang from when we last recorded to now, but then there also just wasn't that much that happened this week that really, you know, knocked my skirt up, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
One thing that did get me interested was a new Aquasphere dive watch from Hanhart in matte black. I like Hanhart watches.
Yeah.
I think we've been on record saying that I don't think Hanhart deserves any hate. I think the hate it deserves
big fan of Hanhart.
Is, I don't know, I think it's maybe misunderstanding the goal of the brand or like whatever. But the Aquasphere, so is... Great size dive watch. It is a 42 millimeter case. It's 13 thick. It's 12.95, but it's 13 thick. 60 click bezel. Sellita SW200 or a Soprod PO24.
Which is like sort of gives me Monta flashbacks a little bit.
Yeah, remember? Like, and there's been a couple brands that have done that. It's like you're going to get one of these two really good movements. We have them both. And,
yeah.
And you'll be pleased with either. I'm kind of intrigued by that swap of them, by that exchange of it. But we, you know, we see other brands that are like, you can have it in automatic or you can have it in mechanical or quartz.
Yeah.
And take your pick. But because they're not doing a different league of movement, it's all staying in at 1,540 euros on the strap, 1,740 on a bracelet.
I got to wonder if this is just like supply availability, like they had different...
Or maybe they're experimenting with Soprod and testing it out because everyone's using the Sellita 200, so you know that there cannot be shortages with it,
yeah.
Right? It's dare I say, it's probably the second most used movement in affordable watches right now.
Perhaps, right behind, yeah.
Maybe it's even surpassed NH's.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I would – that would shock me. That would shock me.
But I think this is the watch. This is the movement in this caliber of watch. The matte is really good on it. Red accents. I don't dig the font, but that's kind of whatever. This is just a new color release.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my least favorite of all the Hanharts, I think. I don't want to say all the Hanharts, but this is my least favorite of current. Sort of the current Hanharts. Yeah. And there's exactly one reason for that. Actually, there's one and a half reasons for that. So the half reason... I'm not wild about the carve out on the lug flanks on this one. It just doesn't. It seems unnecessary to me. I don't really understand it in the context of the watch. Like why?
It's a dust catcher.
Yeah. Right. The other thing, of course, and I've said this in the past. The other thing is that terrible stencil bezel font. I just do not. I don't understand that it is such a. And I say that because this is a pretty conservative watch. It's I think attractive, like it. But this it's not doing wild things. You know, you've got the weird, but the two wild things it's doing, the two things it's doing to get attention, I don't like. And that's not true for all Hanhart. You know, Hanhart is a watch company that takes some risks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm oftentimes really, really enamored by those risks that Hanhart takes. This watch, not so much. I just don't see it. What's the RP on this?
1,600
bucks. Yeah. I mean,
probably. So since it's in euros, I think we're going to go a little north of 1,800 on a bracelet.
That's a lot of dough. It's a lot of dough for this watch, I mean for this watch, yeah.
This is Ocean King money, and I think Ocean King has a better job on their fonts. I like the case better. I like their second hand a lot.
There's all sorts of subjective reasons to take this over an Ocean King. I think. I mean, brand prestige, heritage.
The seconds hand, the skeleton. I mean, the whole skeletonized handset is just in and of itself a win.
Yeah.
You can't fix the font. That's
yeah. I just don't get doing a stencil font on this. Somebody liked it. Somebody was like, "Oh, this looks really good and outdoorsy and cool." But for me, it just looks dumb.
Yeah, I don't. It just seems antiquated.
I don't even know if it seems like I don't know, kind of some. Bullshit. It seems like some bullshit. I was just opening a book, Andrew, as if
you were going to find something in it that wasn't notes in crayon for when we have to edit things out.
I was going to find our next watch in that book. Turns out it doesn't have any, the internet.
It doesn't. What a fucking weird book.
Let's talk about a watch I do like. Okay. The new Seiko 5 Sports Field GMT. Now, you will look at this thing and say, that's not a new watch.
As I did, maybe.
or maybe you really, really know your Seiko 5 Sports references, and you'll be like, wow, wild. But for me, I was like, is these new? And turns out they are. I really like them. I like them both. So this is the sort of Seiko 5 Sports Explorer. I don't want to call it an Explorer homage, but definitely it's got some Explorer lean. Is that right?
It's very E2.
Yeah. So we've seen this before in other colorways. I think there's a black, and I think there's a really nice denim, like a patina denim that I really like.
There's always a cornflower.
They've released this in two new colors. One of those is...
Why, I already got my whiskey.
One of those is a sort of warm,
give it back,
drabby green, and the other is a sort of ivory.
I was going to say creme brulee.
Creme brulee. Very nice, Andrew.
I'm expanding my color palette.
Perhaps, yeah, a creme brulee ice cream even.
Ooh.
Yeah.
French vanilla, then, if that's where we're at.
These both have lovely orange GMT hands.
The orange looks better on the green. I think they could have chosen a more, like a better contrasting pop with that creamy dial, but on the green, it's good.
I think it's fire on both. Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you on that subjective point. I think I really like the orange, you know, and I don't always like a cream dial. I am not a huge cream dial kind of guy, Andrew. It's not my...
You like crispy white, Arctic white, as do I. I think
here, though, I'm kind of for this.
Seiko's cream color is good. This is the same, about the same color as is on the Sarb.
I say a little bit more saturation than on the Sarb.
A little bit more, but you really don't realize like how warm that color is until you see it next to something Arctic white. And here, with like an Arctic-y backdrop, it really pushes that warmth through. I think in person, this is going to be a lot softer white.
So new references are HDB-001K and HBD-002K. That's got to be a typo, right?
HBD?
That they have different... Yeah, so we've got...
No.
There's one of these is HDB.
No, they're both
001K, and the other one is HBD.
Oh, that's a typo, because earlier in the article, they both show HDB-001, HDB-002. That's a Seiko thing. The colors are their numbers.
Okay, yeah, I think you're probably right. I do see there's different parts of the... So in the first paragraph, so Revolution really needs to work on their shit.
So when they got down to reference, the writer HBD.
Also in the first paragraph.
In the first paragraph.
They're flipped in the first paragraph.
They are.
Anyway.
What a disaster. D and B are like that's a hard keystroke combination. HDB or HBD. That's a weird.
Maybe he was just flying, and then someone did the reference information on the back end, and they used his information from the first paragraph.
Yeah.
That's my guess. Okay. No, we're not really. This is totally easy mistakes to make. I'm not really. I was joking.
I take a front. I am fronted.
We've got 12 and 24 hour readouts on the dial, 24 hour on the bezel, because, of course, this is a 24 hour watch. I do not believe that the bezel rotates. So you don't get that potentially fourth time zone. You're limited to the third time zone.
For $675, though, I would...
Or excuse me, you're limited to the second time zone.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. And I'm also not offended by it.
No, this is Australian
money, so this is like a $500 watch.
That's right. 100 meters of water resistance, which I love. I mean, this is in a great five-link bracelet. This is... and that's a true five-link bracelet. That's not a Jubilee. It's not quite evenly spaced, but that's a five-link. I think these are great. I really like these. I like these new colorways. It's a Seiko 5 Sports. It's not going to, as Andrew said, knock, not blow his skirt up, but it is.
It's drafty. I don't want to wear a light skirt that can get.
It is really cool. These are really cool. If you need $500, like maybe you're going to go to Europe for a month and you just want something to wear.
And don't care if you lose it or break it or get robbed.
Right. What a great, or leave it in a hotel, or who knows, right? Who knows? That would be expensive. It would be suck to leave this in a hotel. With that said, if you know.
What a tip though.
All you have is, all you have is Rolexes or whatever, and you want something just relatively trouble-free to travel with. I think this is great. And you don't need it. It doesn't need to just be traveling. Maybe you just want something for your fucking swimming pool in the summer.
Who are you talking to who just has Rolexes and a swimming pool in their backyard? Like, what? Who the fuck do you think listens to
us? I don't know.
And where is this coming from?
I don't know. So anyway,
our demographics we did some data analysis and have learned that our demographic is exclusively people who don't like us.
Yeah. And there's six of them.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, these appreciate are great. I really like them. I like this watch, too. This is probably the five sport that I like the most.
This is a really great addition to the five sports that's like just so densely populated by dumpers. I like this release. Can I talk about another release that I like?
Go.
So, a few months ago, we saw a news release that was kind of secondhand. It wasn't really even a news release. It was like a disclosure release from a law firm that helped do the merger and acquisition of Laurier into Worn and Wound. But there was just nothing else. No commentary, no articles, no releases. And then here in the last couple of weeks, Lorenzo and the team at Worn and Wound have kind of hit the press circuit and made a more of an announcement, been on a couple podcasts, and basically described the circumstances leading up to the partnership. And just as we'd hoped, we now have an inventory re-up from Laurier in the Neptune, Hyperion, Astra, and Falcon, all with inventory immediately available. This is what we were hoping for in this partnership because, like Lorenzo said, and like what we've complained about, and I think fairly, Laurier has been really difficult to get.
At times.
Not Smith's difficult, but if you don't get in, the first week or two of their inventory release, you're not getting in. You have to wait for the next one. And it's been, a year or more since they've done a full run of any of their SKUs. They had their really limited release of the Roosevelt, at Windup in New York. But just crickets from them. And now we have four SKUs fully stocked up and ready for us to buy. The Astra, the Neptune, and the Falcon are all at $699 and the Hyperion at $799, keeping aligned with the prices that we've come to expect from Laurier, given their...
No, I don't know about that.
It's a little high.
I'll let you finish.
But it's the Miyota 9075 movement. They seem to have gone up a little bit, but trending upward consistent to the market. This isn't like a $500 markup. This is, we haven't seen a Laurier watch in a year. And they're $200 more. And I think that it's reasonable to assume that they cost $200 more to make over the course of the lifetime of these watches.
Yeah, I think we're looking at 20 to 25% increases across the board pricing. And that's just what that's what you're going to get with a update like this. There's another really important note here that you did not mention, Andrew, and I was surprised that you didn't mention. So for the first time, Lauriers are being sold with a sapphire crystal.
Oh, yeah. I didn't mention that.
And the pricing, I'm not grumpy about the pricing. That makes sense to me. It sucks. But yeah, that's sort of, prices go up. That is one of the truths of the world. Yeah. Prices go up, and these prices have gone up. Laurier has been pretty aggressive for the last 5 or 6 years at keeping really low prices. And I assume their margins have struggled because of it. And I have a feeling that's part of what led to Lauren and Lorenzo's trouble with the company, right? I think that they had undervalued their watches, and that made it harder to scale.
When there's only two people working for your company, and it's you,
I don't think there was just two people working for the company.
They said it was just them.
Okay, well, there you go.
and you're the only ones getting paid from it, it's really easy to undervalue yourself.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And call it a labor of love.
And so this is, I think, to be expected. That part didn't surprise me. I am pretty taken aback by the decision to universally upgrade everything to, even on the Astra. I get it. There is a huge percent of the population, the watch enthusiast population, that's sort of Sapphire or bust. I get it. But for me, one of the things that made Laurier so charming was their adherence to those original design philosophies, one of those being the acrylic crystal. And that's not just a superficial decision. Acrylic crystals are different. They reflect light differently. They bend and stretch the light differently. They're easier to polish, which is not to say sapphire is going to need polishing, because it probably won't. So that's maybe a nothing burger. With that said, there's something about acrylic, and we're not going to get into it today. But there is a pretty reasonable argument to be made for acrylic over sapphire in terms of safety, right? Safety of the watch and the movement. These are inexpensive movements. If you need to replace one, you know it's $100 or whatever. But I don't love that decision. I hope Worn and Wound gets enough sort of negative feedback. Not that I want Worn and Wound to get negative feedback here, but I hope that there are enough people like me that say, you know, guys, this isn't what I want. That they consider softening what seems to be their initial stance, which is Sapphire across the board moving forward. And nobody's told me that. I haven't talked to anybody about that, and I haven't heard anybody say that. But that, given this release, it seems to be the way they're moving forward with this company. So I hope that that is something that they revisit in the future. But
or at least have some kind of diversity of crystal component.
Yeah, like right. the Neptune. I think the Neptune needs an acrylic crystal. I just think that the Neptune, to be the Neptune, it's got to have acrylic.
Yeah, because it's got to be warmer. And in fairness, I like all of them with sapphire. They all look really good with that crispy clarity.
No doubt.
And I do think they looked better with without.
It sort of takes away some of the, you know, over the years we've talked about, you know, Trasca Laurier kind of in the similar conversation. And I, you know, it's always been something that stuck out to me was their adherence to that philosophy. So this, I don't know. I think that priced at Trasca numbers now and giving up one of their main sort of, I think, charms, it makes it a different conversation. So we'll see what happens. I wish nothing but the best for all of the people involved here. I love Laurier. I love the brand. I love the people involved in the brand. So I wish nothing but the best. But that was that decision really sort of didn't strike me right.
We will see how it continues, because Lorenzo is staying on as the creative director for Laurier. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see where his vision takes it.
That we will. Let's talk about something different here. I think I want to pull us off course just a little bit.
We've never been on a course. Never once.
Well, okay. I'm going to pull us off for her. Hanhart. Back to Hanhart.
Again?
Yeah, but different. Hanhart has introduced a watch that they're going to call the Square by Square, which is, for right now, at this moment, a limited edition of exactly 6 prototype watches. Okay. So this is not a watch that, for the moment, you can get. Hanhart has not released any information about what they intend to do with this watch in the future. But right now, they are making and selling 6 of these. They are supposedly selling these six watches for €1,890, including a 19% VAT. I have to imagine that they're testing waters with these, right? They're calling them prototypes.
Whose waters?
Okay, so I don't know. This is such a bizarre release. And not just because of the watch, which is bizarre. So what this is a square watch. I think it is pulled in a little bit on one of the diagonals. It's oriented on a bias. So it actually presents as a diamond on your wrist. And I want to say that the up and down diagonal is slightly longer than the left to right diagonal of the diamond, I guess. And that checks out with the numbers. This is a round dial inside of a diamond-shaped rehaut with circular lines around the rehaut that slowly morph into that square-ish shape.
Yeah, they're like
shape.
Concentric circles, but they look like they're actually traveling at... They go to a different elevation on the 3 and 6 versus... Or the 3 and 9 versus the 12 and 6.
And then
it
this
like gives it almost like a valley feel.
Pulled down. It's pulled down at 12 and 6 and lifted up at 3 and 9. So it gives you sort of a Pringles potato chip shape. This is released in two variants. This is released in a sunburst blue centerpiece and also a mosaic mother of pearl, a blue mosaic mother of pearl center circle. Both of these, they call this a hyperbolic paraboloid with surfaces that appear to curve inwards and outwards at the same time. We've got a bit of a dish in the dial, you know, and that rehaut comes up. The case profile on this thing is fucking wild. It does look like it's got a bit of a booty, but I understand that the actual Z dimension is like 10.4. It's got some wild, I don't want to call them crown guards, but that's the only thing I can think to call them.
There's like a cavity above it, too.
Yeah.
Butt cheeks.
And then a bizarre font.
Yeah, I was going to ask how you felt about the font.
I don't like it. I don't like it. It's the one part of this watch that I'm like, okay, it's kind of space-agey art meets art deco. You know, it looks like they look like runes or, alien artifact font. I don't like it. The handset's really interesting.
It's a closed bracket for the one.
The handset are not swords, but rather they're like triangles.
Yeah.
Like Blade. It's a wild watch. And so they worked with a designer, and his name is...
This rehaut looks 3D printed, almost like it's glued on to the dial.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Marcus Wiedemann, who is a Munich-based designer, they had a...
Did you say he's a eunuch?
Munich.
Oh, it's like, why is that a thing?
A Munich-based designer. And this was previously submitted to the Dubai Watch Week Grail Watch Design Competition. And it wound up being named as a finalist in the... I'm going to start talking and I'll stop when the category name is done. Most out-of-the-box, innovative yet viable-shaped watch design category. It's pretty specific.
Also not. it's like that's a category. How do you like list the win for that award on your on your resume? You think
this thing's wild, man. This is a crazy watch. I like it. I wonder if you know you have to imagine that this is going to be released.
It kind
of
gives
some
me
point
like,
in numbers.
It gives me like Cartier meets Hamilton vibes.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little bit weird, a little tacky, but then also like feels like a very deliberately designed piece of jewelry.
Yeah. Yeah. I accept. It is,
you can't get it on the website. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's unobtainium.
I just checked.
The thing I find the most peculiar about this is the price, right? They didn't release this as some sort of horology, truly, truly expensive. You know, you think if you're going to make six of something.
I think that's maybe why they did it, why it's a finalist in the but viable category. It's not like they did something that remained affordable and is still...
Yeah, but that competition is done, right? I'm cool with this. I'm cool with this. It's weird, in a way I like. I gotta imagine that $2,000 price. They have to be thinking about pushing this forward as a catalog item. So maybe they're trying to figure out. I do understand that they had some sapphire crystal problems when they were in the prototyping phase, because they, the crystal was apparently pretty hard to make and it was breaking. So it could be that they're getting six of these out into the world to let people bash on them and see if the crystal's viable.
Maybe.
That's a possibility. I'm making things up. I don't know anything, but yeah, they're cool, man. 40 millimeters from 12 to 6, 38 from 9 to 3, lug to lug of 32.8 millimeters, which can't be right. I think, yeah, maybe it is.
It has to be because the lugs are overshadowed by the case by a full 10 millimeters.
And then 10.9 thick. I think I said 10.4 earlier, but it's 10.9 thick. So
it looks
100 meters of water resistance with an SW100 movement.
Yeah, it looks chunky, but the bracelet sits flat against your wrist almost. So all that watch is X-axis or is Y-axis.
It's up in the air.
It's going to tower over your wrist.
Yeah, it's an interesting release. I find it intriguing, not just because of the watch, right?
This is a watch that you wear over the cuff of your shirt.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Of your French cuffed shirt.
Yeah. You gotta get a strap extender for it.
What's next, Andrew?
We have a Soyosa Shore Time Slip Limited Edition from Citizen.
Sure we do.
And I love the Soyosa. I think it's probably the best Citizen release since the Kamasu.
That's an Orient.
Yep. whatever.
Just move it along.
I think it's a great release. One thing that I do like about Citizen and Orient when they do limited edition watches, they just make a bucket load of them and then they don't make them again.
Yeah.
They don't do the only 1200. They don't do, it's only going to exist for so long. They're not generating hype around limitedness or exclusivity. They're just saying, hey, we're just going to do one run of this and there's going to be 12,000.
Yeah.
So
you can probably get one.
You can probably get one.
But get it now.
Yeah. Because a year from now, we probably won't have any more. But this year, yeah, we're going to have some.
Yeah.
So this colorway is this charcoaly, slaty, lightly textured dial that kind of sunbursts towards a darker on the outside. Fully gold markers with loom, gold handset. And then what I don't super dig is in the bezel, it's not color matched to the gold. It's like that Fotina.
Yeah, it's sort
kind
of tan,
bronzy, which is a little coppery. Bit of a bummer, but it does still work with the rest of this watch. I think it's a cool colorway. It's a way to add like a lot of flavor to the Soyosa without being wild or weird.
Yeah, I accept. I agree with you. You know, this is a limited edition in really name only. It's not something that. It's not something that I think the public will treat like a limited edition for obvious reasons.
I mean, 12,000 watches is more than most small brands make in a year.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But I do, I do like what they've done here. I think that it's an attractive watch. I think Citizen does a really good job with this style of bracelet. I don't know what you want to call this, but
it's kind of like the president, like a round president, right?
It's sort of a beefy president. Yeah. This is sort of where Citizen's bracelets really shine, and all of the bracelets that Citizen sells that people say, oh, I love that bracelet. It's all
it's this bracelet.
It's always this style. You've got like a really nice gradient and textured dial. This is good. I don't know what time slip is.
And here's something I do like about this bracelet is they've upgraded to screw pins, in this bracelet. And I don't know when they did that, but previously this style of bracelet that they've done,
I think it's pin and collar.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's pin and collar.
These have screw heads.
That's the split on the pin.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm like 95% sure that these are split pin.
Oh, fuck, I hate that.
I don't hate a split pin.
I don't like Citizen's execution of it. When I sized my Nighthawk bracelet, I ended up breaking pins and links. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Links.
Yeah, no, that's irritating.
So it fits and I sized it and then took it off of the watch and put it on a Barton. But I wanted the bracelet to fit.
Yeah, not a cheap watch. The Suyo is not a cheap watch, but
no, they're $500. $525 for all these.
I like it. Yeah, 100 meters of water resistance, so it's not leaning super hard into the dive. But no, as a skin diver or whatever, I think this is great.
It's Citizen's answer to the PRX.
Sure, I accept.
But it just has a bezel.
Yeah, I accept. Was that your watch?
Yeah, I picked that.
Okay. Union Glashütte. Glashütte. Union Glashütte. A German company, if you didn't know. This is a German watch company.
What about that says German to you?
The German watch company Glashütte has introduced a motorsport, sort of a vintage 1980s, 90s vintage rally-inspired chronograph as the official watch of this year's Saxon Classic, which is a 600-kilometer German rally race that features only classic cars. I think nothing newer than 2003.
God, is that what it takes to be a classic car now?
And this is the 23rd edition. So I wonder if, did they cap it that first year? Anyway, whatever. I don't know that much about it. But this is a watch that sort of is an homage to that vintage rally car. And it hits. This is their Averin platform. They've done this in the past with Norimus chronographs, but this is a Averin chronograph, which has sort of a angular Monaco.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Monaco bicompacts chronograph. We've got sort of, you know, if you know anything about Union Glashütte, this has got familiar Union Glashütte vibes, but a distinctive color scheme and also a really interesting dial, which is like an embossed tile dial with a livery racing stripe at the southwest corner of the square. We've got a stainless steel case. It is a 41 by 41 millimeter case, 15.45 thick. I'll come back to that.
Woo!
With a 49.47 millimeter lug to lug. pretty sharp geometry. Standard bicompacts layouts. Date at 6 o'clock, which I like here. The Averin chronograph includes I think they call this a sort of manufacturer caliber. It's the UNG 27.S2, which is a Valjoux 7750 architecture chronograph movement made by made by Union Glashütte. It's got a silicone balance spring. It's cam operated, 28,800 vibrations, 65 hour power reserve. Quick change straps on this, and 3,700 euro, which is about right for this watch.
Yeah,
it's a chunky bitch, but 7750s are chunky bitches.
Yep, and for a square watch, that is totally fine because square gets chunky right away, even if it's thin.
And this thing will be a monster. 41 by 41 square. This thing is going to wear every bit of 45, 46 millimeters.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. That black, gray, and red stripe is hot fire.
Yeah.
I've never really been interested in the Averin before because I hate all the colorways of it. I like this colorway a lot.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I really like it.
And on the black rally strap, hoo-wee.
Yeah, yeah. This is... this is definitely the Averin. I mean, they do traditional sort of blues, and I think they've got a green, and they've got blacks. It's a fine watch. There's nothing.
They're just not. They're not colorways that scratch my itches. You know.
Sure. Yeah.
They leave me itchy.
I like it. It's cool. It isn't something you impulse buy, but you're going to want to think about this one. But it is limited. I can't remember how many parts they are making.
And if you give a shit about enduro racing or the German racing world, this might be
350 pieces.
Yeah.
And at those prices with this company making them, I think you could probably get one if you really wanted.
That's an actual limited run right there.
Unless these guys, you know, doing this race are going to eat them up, you know. I don't know. Yeah, it's cool. I think this is an interesting watch. We, you know, not a lot. Not a brand the winner we talk gets one about. Of these. Do we talk about? Have we ever talked about Union Glashütte on the show?
I know we have, but it has been a time.
Yeah, yeah. What's next, Andrew?
What are we at on time?
We are at 42 minutes. Believe it or not.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, sorry. The assassins will wait.
Hi, Larry. Because we're outside, we also get dogs tonight.
Larry the Golden Doodle has made an appearance. Hi, Larry. Larry's in love with Andrew, so he's...
He does. He's my buddy. Okay, so we've talked... let's talk about another Glashütte. The Nomos Glashütte Tetra 27 White and Tetra 27 Duo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Another square watch.
Yeah.
We've talked about the Tetra...
A bunch. We've talked about
the Tetra a bunch. So this is a watch that's certainly going to wear a whole lot better. Number one, because it's not a 7750 base chronograph. Stop. You can get into my lap.
He thinks he can.
He's
all the way up there.
He is fully in, and now let him...
Larry, get down, buddy. Get down. Yeah, Larry, down.
He's made his... Okay. He's staked his claim.
Decisions have been made.
Okay, it's a 27.5 millimeter all directions square case, 6.1 thick.
Yeah.
So the Tetra 27 White is galvanized white silver plated with small seconds and black printed numerals and markers, temperature blue steel.
The dial is silver.
Yes.
The dial is silver.
And the Duo is galvanized white and gray silver plated. So the big difference here is actually pretty minor when you look at them side by side. The takeaway here is that
small seconds is what it is.
Yeah, the Duo is no running seconds and a gray square in the middle of your square or your circle of markers, and the 27 White has small seconds and no gray square. These are fantastic.
He took my headphones. He's got them all. Oh, and he almost got me too.
The big takeaway here is that this is an extremely well-sized, super comfortable square watch, and it's super attractive because that's what Nomos does, is just good-looking watches. Usually Nomos doesn't scratch my itches. This is one that is scratching the itch for me. I really dig this. I might be entering a square watch phase. And here's the real winner. None of these are over $2,200. like all in the realm of obtainable, attractive, well-manufactured, well-designed, good watches.
Nomos is a criminally underrated watch company. I think of all of the companies.
We've been talking about Nomos since one of our, like the first, in our first 10 episodes, Nomos was on our list, and it has always remained front of mind for us.
Of every single company in the world that makes watches at or about $2,000, there is no, this is easy to say. This sounds controversial, but it's not. There is no other company making shit as cool as Nomos. Now, aesthetically, you might have gripes. I think a lot of people do. But fully in-house.
Yeah, that's the big takeaway. Nobody else is doing it.
Outrageous case dimensions in a good way. You know...
The only person in that category and price segment is Yema doing as much in-house as Nomos is.
Yeah, I think you're right. And they're not even doing as much, right? Nomos is...
Yeah, because Nomos is doing all.
A criminally underrated watch company. And they do that some of that to themselves, right? They are really sort of committed to their... They are, yeah. They probably sell more watches than they can make realistically. And I think they're fine with it. They're committed to this design philosophy, right? And it's not going to be for everybody. You know, I think Bauhaus is the easy phrase. I'm not sure it's accurate, but in terms of production, there's no other company on earth at that price segment that's doing things as well as Nomos.
No.
Yeah.
No. And there's people that come almost close, but they're not also doing full in-house movements.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's such a cool company, and so this is small. This is a 27mm, which I think means it'll wear probably
like a 32.
Yeah, 32, 33, somewhere in that range, which is still pretty small. It's very dressy watch.
Yeah,
are these coming on Cordovan?
Oh, I think it's. Well,
I think these are on Black Shell.
Yeah, they're on Shell.
Yeah, black. Oh, it's Horween Genuine Show. So Chicago Shell Cordovan. 18mm lug width, steel pin buckle, 50 meters of water resistance. You can get this. So interesting. For €1,660, you can get this with a steel case back. For €220 more, you can get this with a see-through case back. And you can get engraving on either one of these. What I will say,
I think for an all in house, I'm getting sapphire. I'm gonna cop for it.
That's right. And especially
even if it's
with
ugly movement,
blued in house hairspray. I mean, these guys are blued in house escapement. These guys are really. I mean, this is just if you care about the horology side of watches, but you can't spend, $6,000, $10,000, $30,000 on a watch, start looking at Nomos, right?
You know, I think when we're talking about the sizing, my guess is that this male model modeling the watch is probably similar in size to us because we're very average sized people. And that watch doesn't look small on him.
No, I mean, it looks fine.
Yeah, it is small, but it doesn't look diminutive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish they did like Old Navy or Banana Republic or REI, where it tells you the dimensions of the model and the size of jacket they're wearing.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just, and you could see the actual movement on this is gorgeous. It's a simple movement, but it's gorgeous. It is gorgeous. DUW 4001, I believe, is the reference. Yeah, DUW 4001. What a great... well, Andrew, that was the last watch that I had on my list. Are there other watches that you wanted to talk about today?
No, I don't care.
Well, in that case, do you want to share another thing?
Do I have to?
No.
Well, I'm going to. I got my kids some cookbooks from America's Test Kitchen. And they are, and I love America's Test Kitchen.
Same.
Like that's my stop number one when getting anything, any kitchen appliance or tool, or accessory. That's where I go because the amount of time and effort they put into stress testing and actually using the equipment is meaningful, and you get like true feedback from people who have used this thing in a commercial and private setting. Like these chefs and these cooks for America's Test Kitchen take this shit home and use it at home, and they use it while they're working all day and in the test kitchen. So anyway, I bought these cookbooks that are intended for kids to learn to cook with, and they were actually like really clever. They have like interesting, not interesting. They've got, what's the word I'm looking for? Markers, I guess, signals on each recipe of like, this requires you to use heat. This requires, like on a stove, this requires you to use an oven. This requires knives, a microwave.
They like, sort of got like a guide like for parents.
A guide so that like when your kid brings you a recipe and they're like, hey, I want to make this, you can just take a quick glance and look at the key and be like, oh no, we are not using that much today. But they're all really, really simple. And the whole idea of this was to be like, for kids to learn to kind of progress through really simple stuff in the kitchen toward like being able to operate entirely on their own in the kitchen at a safe progression, you know? Now, one of the things that came from Test Kitchen is they were talking about using knives, like kids using knives. And they had three recommendations for actual steel sharpenable chef's knives for kids, and they had it in age ranges and then broken down to like, this is actually the one that every age range liked the most. And what they recommended was a brand called, did I send it you the link already?
You did not. Nope. Oh, I've been waiting for it. Just patiently.
I've been talking.
Patiently waiting like everybody at home.
A French brand called Opinel from Savoie.
We know Opinel.
And they sell a variety of, knives for kids like progressing through their cooking experience. So the one that I got is the Set Le Petit Chef, which comes with the one I got is actually not the one that's on the, I went to Amazon and got it, so it's slightly different, but it's still Opinel. It comes with a Y peeler, a chef's knife, and a finger guard. Now there's a couple things that I really liked about the chef's knife and the finger guard. The finger guard fits on like a multi-finger ring and provides, it's not like a cut glove, which is kind of restrictive. It actually lets you put your fingers on what you're cutting the way that you ought to.
Oh, okay. And like curls your fingers
over.
Yeah,
you curl your fingers. You learn that, that technique and then have, this came with the one that I got, has a stainless steel shield for when you go a little off course.
Sure.
It comes with a kind of, I'll call it like a Santoku shaped blade that's sharpenable. It comes out of the box, like it leaves a little bit wanting, but it's like for an early learner, that knife is clearly going to get like swung around and accidentally impact a person. Not like in a violent way, but in like a gesturing with your hands or like, you know, learning how to be aware of having a blade in your hand.
Does this finger guard fit adult fingers?
Yes.
Yeah. I was thinking this is actually pretty clever for like chives or whatever.
Yeah. So I put it on, I tried it, and I was like, oh, this works great. Like to teach that technique, that finger curling technique.
And these things are $6. You can buy it for $6.
Yeah, they cost nothing. So the one that I got was about $60 from Amazon, the Y peeler, the chef's knife, and the finger guard. But then they go up, and they kind of keep moving a little bit up market to like getting a kid a proper chef's knife at the $118 mark. And I think at the point you're buying a $118 knife from Opinel, you can probably do a little bit better if you want to buy your kid a chef's knife.
Or be more deliberate about the decision.
Yeah, right? But for this, for like an entry level, it's got a Y peeler, it's got the finger guard, and a Santoku-shaped blade that is just sharp enough, but it also has a little finger guard on the underside of the handle, right at the heel of the knife, to give you an index point to know where your fingers ought to go. Because I'm a pincher on my blades, and like seeing people like top the the spine of the knife with a finger just drives me nuts. I'm like, you clearly don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're being dangerous right now and stop it. But it creates true index points for a kid to learn proper technique right out of the box, and it's awesome.
That's a good other thing.
So for people looking to like introduce their kids into the kitchen, like I have the plastic ones that were fine for cutting kind of soft vegetables, like not for meat, not for like carrots or anything, but they were good to like get a knife in their hand to deal with some things in the kitchen. This is the next meaningful step to get them a small chef's knife. It's kind of the size of a Petty. It's like a, I don't remember how long it is. It's probably a 5-inch blade.
Great. But
it does the thing.
Great.
Highly recommend. Kids love it. And if the finger guard fits them, like, and you don't have to, like, there's some, when you're trying to teach a kid how to use a knife and, like, use a knife, there's so many things that you have to look for that not having to worry about where their fingers are is really nice.
Yeah. No, totally. That's a good other thing. I approve.
Excellent. Finally.
Andrew, I've got a weird other thing. It's maybe a little left field.
Yes, you do have a weird other thing.
I have flirted with label makers in the past. I got a really cheap, like, Amazon label maker in the past. And I used it a little bit. God, I just hated it. It was terrible. It wasn't good. It was hard to use. Brother is
a gold standard in mobile printers and stuff.
That's right. Brother is a gold standard in label makers specifically. And there are a few other companies that are extremely popular, you know, some of them for the like automotive sector. But Brother is, I think, for general use, widely considered like the company. Just stay here. If you don't feel like you need to learn any more and you just want to get something, get this. Now, Brother has a number of very new, very fancy models. This is not one of them. This is a slightly older model, but I picked up a Brother PTD 210 label maker. We're going to provide a link to Amazon in the show notes. This is a label maker that comes with 4 carts and probably has enough label making material for a very, very long time.
The world with labels.
But that's what I picked up. And I got to tell you, I've used this thing now. I've just finished rewiring a motorcycle. And I don't want to say I'm finished because it doesn't run yet. But
there's wires.
I have just installed a new wiring harness, mostly correctly, on a motorcycle. And I used this thing. I probably did, you know, 100 prints on this thing. It is so easy to use. Now, I will say this thing does a lot. And I have just barely scratched the surface of what it can do. You can save functions and features. You can have like pre-made templates. There's all sorts of things you can do with a label maker. But the very first thing I printed on this, I was like, man, for $70, there is no reason I should have been using this $25 thing I got off of Amazon.
Or God forbid, painter's tape and a Sharpie.
Yeah, and of course, that's a really viable method, Andrew.
Which is what I do. I painter's tape and a Sharpie. I keep a roll of painter's tape and a Sharpie on my cookbook shelf, and that's my label maker.
And I will say that there is something attractive about that. But as I was making these labels for this wiring harness, as I was, you know, swapping things out and needed to kind of make quick notes, it is really convenient to be able to really quickly type in what I need or to save like a line of text and just add a little bit to the end of it. I mean, it is.
Were you doing it in flight, like labeling wires?
As I'm going, yes.
So you were remembering what, like where it came from?
That's right.
That's clever. Yeah. That's smart.
And then, you know, and then just tearing it off and, you know, printing a little bit of extra so I have 2 sides and then just sandwiching it over on the wire, unplugging it, moving on. I'm confident that I know what that is. Mm-hmm. when it comes time to put it back in.
Because that's half of the pain of wiring is like, what the fuck did this come from?
That's right. That's right.
That might even be 80% of the pain of wiring.
I am overjoyed at how convenient and easy this thing is to use. It's one of those things that I just can't believe I didn't buy it before. And as we go through the house and do things, I'm like, oh, hold on, let me go get my label maker, right? This is a little bit of a joke. But it is really, I mean, really, it is the type of thing. You know, I got this new, I've developed a bit of a collection of terminals and connectors as I've done this project. And every time you order terminals, it comes in a different sized box. And like, these things are really... So I bought a stack of the same... It's a stack of boxes that go in sort of a unit, and you pull them out. And I thought, well, what this needs is it needs labels on the front.
Does your toolbox have labels for what each drawer contains?
They do now.
Yeah, they do.
They do now. And
the adhesive is way better than painter's tape.
Yeah.
Because you get clean edges.
Yeah, it is. It is really nice. It is really nice. And so it's just the type of thing... It's the type of thing that I think if you get one, $70, you'll be like, if you don't have a label maker... Just consider dropping $70, even if you don't know what you're going to do with it. Just put it in your cart, buy it now, whatever, and get it. Because when it comes in, you're not going to think about it. And then someday you're going to be like, oh, let me go get that new label maker. And the first time you use it, it'll click. It'll click. And then you will just be, you'll just be me with my kids making fun of me saying, well, let me go get my label maker.
I label everything.
It was really a revelation. And this is from someone who's had a label maker in the past that I hated. Spent a little bit, just not an expensive thing. They do make, I think the PDT220 is the current model. And it is more expensive. Maybe it's not that much more expensive. Anyway, just get a fucking label maker. That's the point. We've got a link to one that comes with four tapes. Get a label maker.
Things need labels.
Yeah. Well, it's pitch black. It's not quite as warm as it was when we started.
My angle's actually pretty good. I still have a little bit of twilight on the horizon.
You got almost the entire sunset, didn't you?
I did. Well, the fence obstructed all the good parts. But I see the stars. I think that's Mars.
Yeah.
I think that's Uranus.
Ah! Got him!
I did lose my phone, though. Oh, there it is.
Really good. Really good show. This was fun. This was nice to record outside.
It was. It's a little chilly. I should have worn pants.
Yeah. It's not quite as warm as it was when we started.
It's okay.
Anything that you want to add before we hang them up for the day?
Definitely not.
Hey, folks, you know, when I do that music, I press it live. I ask Andrew if he wants to say anything, and then I immediately start the music.
Even if I'm still talking.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. If you want to go to our website, it's watchclicker.com. That's the name of the website and also the address of the website. If you want to follow us on social media, I'm not sure why you would want to do that, but if you do... You can find us on Instagram, and that's at 40and20_watchclicker or at watchclicker. If you want to support us, this is important. If you want to support us, you can do that at patreon.com/40and20. That is how we actually keep the show running. And if people don't support us, we're just going to stop. One of these days, you're just going to be like, where did Ever and Andrew go? You probably say that anyway.
Outside. That's where we're going to end up.
And don't forget to tune back in next week for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.